Coming up this week on Sporting Journal Radio.
Rolled into duck camp with a dead deer in my truck.
We're in the process of doing the things that we need to do to legislatively get that sandhill crane hunting season here in Wisconsin.
The season is 90 days long, but hunters don't get 90 days.
6-7 inches of ice on back bays.
I fish, I hunt, and always will. Broadcasting from the Eau Claire Outdoor Studios.
Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
We're not just a radio show anymore. This is Sporting Journal Radio.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Brett Amundson. Welcome to the show. Thank you for watching or listening to this wherever you're at. Great show this week for you. We got Dan Amundson right over there. Dan, what's up?
Hey, another show, another week.
That's right. New coach for the Wild and everything.
Yeah, I bet people didn't expect us to lead off the show talking about the Wild.
Hockey. Yeah, probably
hockey,
not.
Yeah. It's sports journal radio now.
Sports.
We're talking, yeah. Whole life is sports. It's steal other people's bits.
That's right. David Eckhart's over there. David! I forgot what you looked like.
Whoa!
It's been a while.
Welcome back. You've been on some epic trips.
Yeah.
Shot a nice deer.
Yep.
Had some
congratulations.
Shot a pile of snow geese and some ducks. All right, we'll talk about where David was and how he did and what he did here in just a little bit. Also, Mark Kackage is with us. He's with the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Kind of handles their waterfall side of things. He lives around Horicon Marsh. I got to spend some time out there. Did some duck hunting with him on the marsh. Filmed a whole bit about it on the Fish Hunt Forever YouTube channel. Check it out. And interviewed him about some history about the marsh, some water rights issues, which are pretty interesting. There's some water rights situations and lawsuits that came up around the Horicon Marsh that have had rippling effects across the region. So probably some things that have taken place here in Minnesota or the Dakotas are probably results of some court cases that took place out at Horicon Marsh. We'll talk about that with him coming up. Also, ice fishing season is here. We'll get a fishing report from Lake of the Woods and ice conditions report with Joe Henry coming up in just a little bit. But first, Dan, who are the sponsors this week?
Live Target. Match the hatch at livetargetlures.com. Lake of the Woods Tourism. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. Plan a trip for this winter at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Book a trip to fish perch out of a snow bear on Devil's Lake. Learn more at haybaleheights.com. Ottertail Lakes Country. Find your inner otter this winter at ottertaillakescountry.com. And Prairie Sportsman. We're getting very close to the new season, but you can watch other episodes at the Prairie Sportsman YouTube channel right now.
Filmed some really cool stuff for that this year.
We have. And we've got more on the docket that we haven't filmed yet that should be really cool. We were just talking about a couple potential episode ideas that we don't get to talk about yet. But they're cool. So it's
top secret.
Yeah. So you just have to watch the show to find out what we're actually talking about.
Man, I was talking to Ben Bredigan the other day from OnX, and I was telling him about our grouse hunt. And so he had told me, I talked to him at one point earlier this fall, and he was coming back from northern Minnesota. He goes, it's the craziest thing. It's one of the best grouse hunting weekends I've ever had in my life. I said he put up like 40 birds or something like that in 2 days. Like, it was just nutty. So Dan and I went up and filmed a grouse hunt in Beltrami Island State Forest there, and saw two birds in two, like 15 miles of pushing the hardest, thickest bush up there, and saw like two birds right after 6 inches of snow.
I've never been more excited to go upland hunting. Actually, like honestly, I was really excited to go upland hunting because I've heard people like, best grouse here in 20 years. I love to eat rough grouse. If you've never had rough grouse, it's so good. It's the best wild game. And yeah, we came back with buffleheads.
Yeah, that's right.
No grouse.
Which is also delicious.
And a scoter. Yeah, if you want to know how to make bufflehead taste delicious, watch our latest duck hunt on the Fish Hunt Forever YouTube channel.
And we also cooked a sandhill crane up in Saskatchewan this year, and Dan put the video up on that Fish Hunt Forever YouTube channel here the other day. So check it out, subscribe, and share it with your friends right now. We also have something new coming. The North American Waterfowl Podcast is coming very, very soon. Make sure you subscribe to that if you're into the ducks and geese. Got some really cool band stories for the first season of that podcast. It's a podcast that's been in the works for about 3 years now. I think we're finally going to put it out. So interviewed the guys from Jack Miner, learned about some bands that were 30-some years old, some of the longest traveling bird migration. It's just some really cool stuff. Watch for it coming soon. We'll tell you about it here on this show or at Sporting Journal Radio.
Speaking of bands, we got our hands on a brand new band. Yeah. A stainless band. Oh, we hadn't seen one of those yet before, so that was kind of cool.
From Winnipeg.
Yeah, from Winnipeg. Like the ones that are, what, they're replacing rivet bands, I think. Mm-hmm. So none of us had ever seen those before. David, have you ever seen one of them?
I have not.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool that, you know, it's always changing. It's always fun. The banding information, and even though it was a young bird, it was still cool to see it. So that's it's always fun information to learn about.
The research, and Corey Loeffler has told me to get this guy on the show. There's some research being done about those birds around Winnipeg. That's kind of fascinating. So if you don't know anything about it, look into it. Otherwise, I'm sure we'll talk about it here in a future show in just a little bit. It's been a decent hunting season. We've shot a fair amount of geese lately, it seems like, a little bit. Ducks, I don't want to talk about the ducks because I think I don't even know if I shot two mallards this year. And I shot some ducks. Like I shot a few ducks this year. I think there were two mallards. And I feel like every year it's the same story over and over again here where we're at in kind of that southwestern, west central Minnesota. The mallards show up right at the end of the season. And as the season closed this year, what were we seeing on Snapchat from a bunch of people around here?
Just mallards everywhere.
Mallards everywhere. So Trevor Lucky actually started a thread, or somebody started a thread on one of the Facebook groups about getting a 90-day duck season in Minnesota, which I'm all for. I think that might be a bit aggressive.
Well,
but I'm all for it.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Peter Krogh from Pitt Properties. I'm sorry if I'm not saying your last name right. I should know. I've talked to him before. But that he's got the 90-day season idea. And maybe this is the same idea, but it's not. You're not actually, like, the season is 90 days long, but hunters don't get 90 days. Mm. You select 60 days. You just get to pick when it starts. Mm. It's like guys like us, we would start later because we want to hunt later into this year. But guys who want the teal, the early season, and go deer hunting in November, they could start it when it's normally started. That's his idea. Maybe it's the same one as Trevor's. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
His comment was just 90 days, period.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah.
It'd be great if it wasn't flyway regulated.
Well, I've heard people say, you know, longer season, but maybe you close every Monday. So that you still only have 60 days, but it extends longer to the season. I like that idea of picking your 60 in the 90 days.
Let me do some digging on Facebook. He was on a thread about it. Let me see if I can find exactly what he said.
So I was responding to Trevor and a couple of other people there on Facebook. And, you know, I said, hey, that's why I wanted to do an early teal season, because if you do an early teal in mid-September, you push the regular season opener back to that first weekend in October like it used to be. Then go 60 days from there. You can get into December, ideally that first part of December. Obviously, for those of you that hunt in northern Minnesota, I get it. I've heard you. You don't want to go longer because you freeze up. I totally get that. And even some other parts of the state, like here, we're at the end of October, end of November, beginning of December. We got a lot of frozen ponds and stuff here too. But where you got big bodies of water, where you got rivers, you've got ducks still. And huntable numbers of those late season mallards, which are hands down my favorite ducks to shoot. And it seems like every year when they finally get here, I don't have a chance at them. I know not everybody is thinking about ducks right now. People are deer hunting. And by the sounds of it, people did not shoot one with their gun this year because everybody went out and bought muzzleloaders and are trying to kill one with a muzzleloader now. So, all right, what did you find there, Dan?
So it's Peter's post or his comment on a different thread. And there's a lot to break down here. I'm not going to read this whole thing because it's a lot. If you're watching on YouTube, you can pause the video and read it yourself. But basically, he breaks down why this is actually a feasible idea and how it's not really going to create a whole bunch of problems. You know, he says it might push ducks south, which would greatly be appreciated by hunters in southern states. You know, if you get more people hunting up north and get them hunting later, you know, if you hunt some of these birds that are staging up in areas and that hang up here and they're not getting hunted anymore in a river hole that doesn't freeze, well, maybe they'll get pushed south and southern hunters will get to hunt them. That's an interesting thought. It'd be somewhat easy to enforce. It could reduce some duck hunting pressure early in the season, which would benefit everybody. A lot of things like that. I'll let you guys read this for yourself. Go to YouTube and read it for yourself because there's a lot here. We don't have enough time to talk about it all, but it's an interesting concept.
He makes a good point here, and this is what I was talking to Trevor about. As I said, because he's like, well, how can we do this? And I said, the Flyway Council is like the Illuminati sometimes. Yeah. Like, they're hard to reach. You don't know who they are. It's kind of sketchy. You can't really give them suggestions. So how do you do it? Well, we do it here on this show. I've written articles in Outdoor News. And you just got to tell people and get them on board. And that's the biggest thing. If we can get all the hunters out there on the same page, then there's going to be strength in numbers when the DNR puts out waterfowl surveys, when the DNR does their roundtable or a town hall. We did that waterfowl town hall a couple years ago.
2 years ago, I think.
So there's opportunities. Now, should there be more opportunities to speak up and more ways to offer input? Yes, I totally agree with that. But this is a great idea from Peter because if you put that back up there, Dan, I was reading, he makes a great point at the end here. We should stop compartmentalizing blue-winged teal with golden eyes and Canadian mallards.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. You have so many people in Minnesota that like to hunt early, and then they transition to deer hunting or pheasant hunting or whatever, usually deer hunting. They only hunt the first 2 weeks when it's nicer out. You got blue-winged teal around. That's why we have the early teal season, is to keep those guys happy. But there are plenty of people in Minnesota that want to hunt late-season mallards that aren't here during most of the regular season. So when I've had people tell me in this argument, well, you need to give everybody a chance, and everybody has a chance at that stuff. Well, we need to find a way to do it. Instead of just arguing and bickering about it, let's find solutions. And that might be the ticket, is creating your slot. And it would be not, or a longer split, because you guys know, at least here in October, it's always a lull.
October, honestly, is been a terrible month. Like, we talked about how great October is in the hunting season. It's been awful.
November's the best.
If you're up north, I know it's different. October, I lived in Bemidji. I know how northern Minnesota waterfowl hunting is. October can be great, but November is still the better season. Yeah. And, yeah, October, especially the beginning of October, just shut it down.
All the local birds so get bad. Pushed out, and then you sit there and wait for the migration to start up. So finding a way that I like hunting teal. I like eating teal, but I would much rather shoot mallards in November than even wood ducks, you know, in October or a ring. Somebody brought ringbills. Well, then I don't get to shoot my ringbills.
Who the heck goes ringbill hunting? I mean,
divers are fun and everything, but I'm sorry. If it was a ringbill in October or a fat mallard in November, it's not even close.
Or even a goldeneye.
Or a goldeneye.
Like, David, would you rather shoot a goldeneye or a ringbill?
Goldeneye.
Yeah. Everybody, every diver hunter I know would agree with that statement. If you think if the ringbill's the epitome of your duck hunting, get out more. I'm sorry. I sound like a spoiled
Dan with the hot take.
I sound
today.
Like a spoiled duck hunter right now, but if you get excited about a bunch of ringbills, they're fun. They don't taste great. Get a hold of Andy Reeves and Forrest Huset and go shoot buffalo heads out of a layout boat. Then you'll say, screw a ringbill.
There is a lot of tradition in the state for ringbills and bluebills.
Bluebills completely different.
But
I've never shot one.
Where are we at for time? I think we got to take a break.
We do, and I'm getting fired up about duck hunting.
Yeah, I mean, we had so many other things planned to talk about. We just kind of went off about this duck thing.
We need to make this a longer show.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk more about legendary waterfowl and the history of waterfowl at Horicon Marsh, coming up with Mark Kackage. Also, Joe Henry has an ice report from Lake of the Woods. And we're going to talk about, if we get time, we're going to break down some of the deer harvest numbers and what crossbows have shot, the percentage of success hunters, and what the winter severity index has had comparing the last few seasons. It's more all coming up on Sporting Journal Radio.
Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch their legendary perch, but this year, Haybale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye, and they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
We're back. Thanks for tuning in to Sporting Journal Radio, wherever you're listening to this or watching it. Brett Amundson along with Dan Amundson and David Eckhart right there. David, how many days have you hunted this year?
Deer hunted. Deer, I'm at 29.
29. How many deer have you shot?
One.
South Dakota.
South Dakota.
That was a nice buck.
Yeah, I was happy with it.
Do we have a picture of that?
Hang on.
Should be one.
Is that the? Is that? Was that out of a saddle or was that out of the ground blind that you mega stubbled?
Nope, that was out of a saddle.
That was out of
the
saddle.
So the night before I sat my ground blind, but the wind switched. So I had a southeast wind the next morning. So I had a tree for a southeast wind that I could sit in my saddle, and he came out 200 yards away on the fence line and grunted at him, and he came on a line right to me, 25 yards.
Dan and I have had some pretty good trips this year, but lately I feel like we've been, I guess you went over to Wisconsin and deer hunted, damn it. Lately we've been working. You've been all over the place.
Yeah.
He shot some snows, a lot of them.
Actually, that whole duck trip, I shot that deer the first day of that duck trip, so I rolled into duck camp with a dead deer in my truck.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that. Did you quarter it up there? Did you hang it, or what did you do?
So we left it in my truck looking for a place to hang it for the first day, and then the next day we got it hung up and quartered out and just froze it.
So, you had enough room in your truck to bring back.
I strategically left
200
space.
Snow geese and a deer.
Yeah, I strategically left space in my truck. I called my dad that morning and I'm like, I shot one. And he's like, well, now what are you going to do with it? He's like, will it fit in the trailer? I'm like, no, that is stuffed to the brim, but I left room in my truck just in case.
Well, good snow goose trip, good deer trip, and then you guys had your annual rabbit hunt.
Yep. So that was the Friday after Thanksgiving. This was the 18th annual. So 18 years of getting together with a good group of guys and walking groves and shooting some rabbits.
And did you use the 410?
I did not use the 410. Nope. I just shot the 20 gauge this year. So
boring.
Sad you don't want that gun scratched.
Yeah,
up
I don't. I don't like trudging through groves with that gun anymore.
It's a nice gun. We got some CWD news, Dan. There was a deer tested positive by Wabasha.
Wabasha, Minnesota. Yeah. Not good, but I guess there's been a history of CWD down there. It's no surprise. So they will continue to work on that, and people continue to put on their tinfoil hats and say it's a conspiracy, but I don't know. I'll leave that up to everyone else's own opinion.
So through the time of this recording, deer harvest numbers, 145,814. That's down from 172 last year. Buck harvest this year I thought might be up a little. It's not. Buck harvest is down. We had 60% of the harvest were adult bucks last year. This year, it's about 56%. So it's down just a little bit. I had a whole breakdown of numbers and zones and this and that, but we don't have enough time. Talk too much about ducks to get to break it all down. But this one stat I wanted to talk about, though, this year, 19,739 deer so far were killed in the archery season, with 8,500 coming from a crossbow. So that's 43% of the archery kills this year so far with a crossbow.
Huh?
And that's actually gone up. That opening weekend, it was 40% worth of crossbow, and since then, crossbow kills have gone up just a little bit. And I'm not gonna have enough time to break into this. Wisconsin was down 17.6% this year during the gun season as well. So deer numbers down for Wisconsin and Minnesota. That northeastern part of Minnesota and the northwest part of Wisconsin hit pretty hard with snow last year. And we all know what eats deer when there's a lot of snowfall. So numbers were down in both those areas. Oh, one thing I wanted to say, the 100 series, northern Minnesota, northeastern Minnesota, you talk about the winter severity index, et cetera, or if you look back to 2017, the success rates for hunters there it was 35% success rate in the Northeast in 2017. Since then, it's gone to 30%, 27%, 26%, 24%, down to 22% last year in the Northeast. So that's 13% decrease in success rates from hunters. And we had one or two mild winters in there. So you can blame it on winter severity. You can blame it on timber management, whatever excuse you want to pull out of your pocket this week. But I think we can also understand that there's a lot more predators since then. Talk about carrying capacity on the land for wolves all you want, but I think the number of predators has obviously increased between wolves and black bears in that
time. Follow the science.
Follow the science. That's right. Okay. Enough about deer. Real quick, ice fishing is here. Dan, we'll talk about your shuttle next week, but David got a new ice fishing rig.
Is that right?
Is sweet. Check this thing out right here.
I wish I had that thing.
Look at that.
That thing's awesome.
What is this all about, David?
So there was 100 of them made. Only 5 still survive, but that is built-in rod storage and bait box built right into the car.
If you're not watching this on YouTube, check this out on YouTube. You can see pictures of it. It's a 1956 Powell Sport Wagon.
Oh, you can't look at it anymore.
It's gone.
I was just there you go. I was reading it, and then Dan took it away.
Sorry.
Between 1954 and 1957, they made 100 station wagons on a refurbished Plymouth chassis with unique pull-out fishing rod holders and bait boxes at the rear. Only 5 survived. That is awesome. I got a new truck that I'm pretty happy about, too. We'll show you this real quick. Went to Invergrove Toyota. Picked up a new Toyota Tundra, and what we'll show you the picture of the truck. I think it's awesome. It's a limited Crew Max with the off-road package. And then the thing that blew my mind the most, and some of you guys that drive new trucks know this, is look at the camera. So that's some family members over Thanksgiving. We're at my parents' place. And so as they're getting into the truck, you can see them on this camera. It looks like some sort of government drone. But it's all these cameras around giving you kind of the simulated aerial view of it. That, to me, was unreal. And you can hit that view button and get that view anytime you're driving. It puts it up on the screen for a number of seconds.
It does not have built-in rod holders, though. But that's what the box is for, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely thought you were trying to cut me off there with cricket noises. Oh. No, that was...
That's you.
That was my phone.
That's your own phone.
That's my cue.
I'm not that rude.
To wrap it up. All right, we got Mark Kakich coming up from Horicon Marsh. Some really cool, interesting facts and history about that legendary waterfowl marsh in Wisconsin. And also Joe Henry with an ice conditions report from Lake of the Woods when we come back.
Live Target, the leader in Match the Hatch, is back with new lures that also match the action. Introducing the Live Craw. The Live Craw is irresistible to bass, walleye, and other freshwater species. FTEC's winner, the Ultimate Frog, looks and acts just like a swimming frog. With an exposed ultra point mustad hook and replaceable legs, the Ultimate Frog has 2 styles, 2 sizes, and 8 colors. And iCast and FTEC's winner, the Live Shrimp, mimics a fleeing shrimp for saltwater anglers. Coming soon from Live Target.
Lake of the Woods, the walleye capital of the world, is calling out to you. From the northwest angle to the south shore and Rainy River, this is the Midwest's number one ice fishing destination. Walleye, sauger, perch, northern pike, and eel pout. The fishing on Lake of the Woods is like a world of its own. Experience the most amazing fishing through one of the many full-service resorts featuring heated fish houses, ice transportation, meal plans, and sleeper fish house options. For more information, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in on the network. By demand, sportingjournalradio.com. Or maybe you're watching this on YouTube. Thank you very much. We're overlooking Horicon Marsh right now. I figured a duck boat would make a good backdrop for us. Mark Kakich is joining us. And what do you do, Mark?
My name is Mark Kakich from Neosho, Wisconsin. I chair the Migratory Committee for the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. And I'm fortunate enough that I run a Learn to Hunt program here with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Ducks Unlimited on the Federal Refuge.
You've spent a lot of time in this marsh, haven't you?
I've been very fortunate that I got to spend a better part of my life traipsing around Horicon Marsh.
What do you like about it?
It's peaceful, it's quiet, it's out of the way, but it offers a diverse, set of opportunities that's 12 months out of the year. Hunting, fishing, hiking, and a lot of things in between.
Yeah, there's a lot that you can do here and a lot of history involved with this marsh. From at one time it was a lake, at one time it was a bunch of farm fields. Now it's the largest freshwater cattail marsh in the United States.
Correct. And, being that it's come full circle in that regard, it at one time was probably in the top 5 greatest conservation success stories of all time, and had one of the greatest concentrations of migratory game at one time as well.
Yeah, so you can obviously waterfowl hunt here. That's kind of the history. The history of this marsh for outdoor recreation really comes from waterfowl hunting and trapping, right?
Correct. The marsh, the state portion of the marsh is still managed as a fur farm, a licensed fur farm in the state of Wisconsin.
That blows my mind.
It's the only one left, to my knowledge.
And, you know, every day during hunting season, you can come out here, you can waterfowl hunt, you can pheasant hunt, you can turkey hunt, you can small game hunt, bow hunt, gun hunt. You know, they pull some monster bucks out of here every year. And waterfowl hunting is, well, you know, it's Horicon Marsh.
So obviously this is managed for a number of different things, managed, you know, primarily for waterfowl historically. Talk about how that's gone as far as, you know, the water levels, what's been done, water control structures, things like that.
So as you said, that this is the largest freshwater cattail marsh in the country. And, you know, coming out of the 1800s into the 1900s, you didn't see a cattail out here. It was a vibrant, very healthy ecosystem. And considering where we're at today, cattails have taken over a large portion of the marsh. I think everybody would like to see less cattails, but I think the department and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are doing the best they can at times to, you know, reduce the cattails and try to promote, you know, better aquatic vegetation, which promotes a better healthy, you know, environment for everything. Our water quality over the last 5 to 8 years is significantly improved. You know, we do have, there is a large carp population that is here on the Rock River. It's very difficult to control because it's not an impoundment system here. You know, it's a free-flowing river system. So to kill carp, it's a lot more challenging for, you know, Department of Natural Resources.
Well, we talked to some of the people at the Department of Natural Resources. They have they're starting to employ a bunch of different methods to eradicate some of these cattails. It's a hybrid of the narrowleaf and broadleaf cattail, and these things are everywhere. I mean, over in Minnesota, back home where I'm at, there's so many areas that same thing. There weren't any cattails historically, and now they're just choking everything.
Yeah, and it's an extremely resilient plant. I mean, you just don't pull it. Right? I'm sure, you know, discussing with Eric, he can tell you how the root system operates, but, you know, you really have to attack the root system through various methods to be truly effective.
Yeah, if you've ever hunted in them, you know how connected they are.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing. When you're marsh skiing, as we did a little earlier, you know, it provides a great base in most cases, but it'd be nice if they weren't here, at least not as many.
And now you got to tell people what marsh skis are.
Well, you know, Horicon and the Winnebago Lake area is very surrounded traditionally in various methods of hunting, you know, skiff hunting and using marsh skis, long wooden skis, to ski across the top of the cattails. It started here. And, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, it was extremely popular. And now here with the, you know, the strong growth of cattails, the potholes that people used to ski to are filled in. You don't see too much of it, but you do see some guys skiing on a regular basis.
You were telling me about how the water is managed when it comes to rights and ownership and how that has set a precedent for a lot of cases.
Yeah, so the Wisconsin Public Trust Doctrine is very unique. That started back here. There used to be 5 specific private hunting clubs here on the marsh. Two of them, one was the Greenhead Hunting Club, who still exists today, and the Diana Shooting Club that is not too far from where we're standing right now. A gentleman by the name of Paul Husting left the Greenhead Hunt Club, push-pulled all the way up into the marsh proper, and was arrested by a private game warden from the Diana Shooting Club in turn for trespassing, and he decided to defend himself personally in court.
No, wait a minute, because they said that each hunting club owned part of the marsh?
Correct. So what it was every hunting club owned a piece of the marsh.
Okay.
And Paul Husting said, well, you know what, I think that everybody in the state has a right to the waterways that exist, you know, lakes and rivers. So that being said, he did eventually win the Supreme Court case, and that now is in turn to the public trust doctrine and how we view water rights. And unique thing is that several years after he won that case, he was involved in a hunting accident on Rush Lake. His brother shot him in the shoulder and ended up dying that evening. So he died at a fairly young age. And however, those water rights still exist today.
Left a legacy.
He did leave a legacy.
So talk about what condition the marsh is in right now, how hunting has been this year.
Every year, hunting's a little different out here. The marsh changes from year to year, with the water levels fluctuating primarily on how much rain and snow we get. And, you know, we do have a dam. There's a dam here on the federal side, federal and state border. And then there's another dam here in the city of Horicon, and then another dam in Hustisford. The dam in Horicon is in the process of being replaced. So probably starting, I'm sure Eric told you, and, you know, maybe 2025, they're going to be looking at replacing or repairing the dam here. So the water levels fluctuate, which in turn, you know, it can make things a little challenging at times.
Well, I know there were a ton of ducks up on the federal side. You saw some of them on the state side, a lot of them sitting up there. I mean, that's quite a complex. Two-thirds of the marsh is federally owned, federal refuge. There's some Canada geese around. You know, when I think of Horicon, I think of it as a historic Canada goose staging area. But man, the sandhill cranes that are here right now, I think I heard about 10,000 of them or so was the last count. I don't know. It seems like maybe that's grown. I don't know. I just, everywhere I drove today, driving around the marsh, there were pockets of cranes in all the fields everywhere. Yesterday, all day long, there were flocks of cranes going in and out of the marsh. There are sandhill cranes everywhere right now.
So the sad thing is if you would have came here 10 years ago, we'd be standing here having this conversation, and all you would hear would be Canada geese coming back to the marsh. However, you can come up here right now and not see a Canada goose during hunting season, which is unconscionable, right? But it's a fact. However, it's not going to take you long to take a short drive out of town and see fields loaded with sandhill cranes, which is a testament of hunters and how hunters play a role in conservation. Almost every major success story, hunters play a significant role, and sandhill cranes is another perfect example.
And personally, I'd like to see a hunting season on the eastern population of those cranes, and there already is in a number of states. And I think it's coming eventually for Minnesota and Wisconsin too. There's just some hurdles that we have to jump to get that done.
I can tell you that on the way here today, I had conversations with Bruce Ross, Executive Director of Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. We're in the process of doing the things that we need to do to legislatively get that sandhill crane hunting season here in Wisconsin. I mean, as you know, there's no scientific or biological reason. It's a social issue. It's a political issue right now. So we as hunters need to show that, you know, here, especially here in Wisconsin and upper Midwest, we are the best, not only policemen of conservation, but we're some of the best conservationists, you know, in the country.
Yeah, you open up a hunting season here in Wisconsin or Minnesota, you're not going to wipe out this population. It's the fastest growing subspecies of crane population out there, the eastern population, and they're already hunting them in a few states, and the population just continues to grow. And where I'm at in western Minnesota, they're expanding across the central part of the state into western Minnesota, which historically they've never been. So they're just great. And I think they're cool. Like, I love to see them. I love the sound of them. I like to eat them. They're delicious. They're cool looking birds. They're prehistoric. And
10 years ago, you didn't see a sandhill crane.
Right.
10 years ago, if you saw a sandhill crane in Horicon, you'd be like, oh man, I just saw a sandhill crane. And now you're like, wow, I saw sandhill cranes. I saw some whooping cranes, but I didn't see any geese.
Yeah. There's just a few geese that I saw around here this weekend, but I did see the whooping cranes, and that is actually, you talk about spotting a sandhill 10 years ago, that's kind of, for me anyway, seeing a whooping crane was pretty neat. You know, when there's approximately 800 or so in the world with 100 of those in captivity or whatever the exact numbers are, to be able to see one, in fact, see two, and to be able to film it and get pictures, and that thankfully they were feeding real close to the road one day. So I got some real up close views of that pretty rare species.
Yeah, and you know, having the International Crane Foundation here in Wisconsin helps. I think it brings a lot of publicity to it. International Crane Foundation is a member of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, so people think that, you know, why would one, they want to be a member, or two, why would a hunting organization want them to be a member? But I think that speaks to who hunters are, and that we need to exist with everybody. And I don't think they're an anti-hunting organization.
Okay.
They're a conservation organization.
Sure.
And they're just focused on a bird that we don't hunt yet in this state.
Well, it's been a great few days out here. I really appreciate you taking us out. We got out in your boat and got to hunt one afternoon out there. It was beautiful, calm, sunny, beautiful
sunset. Great vacationing weather.
Yeah. That's right. We were hunting over your hand-carved decoys, which was really neat, and then some decoys from some other guys.
Yeah, so Pat Gregory, he's from Illinois, a friend of mine and a very, very good carver. Bill Kelpin from Heartland, another close friend and great carver.
Yeah, that it's neat to see, people take an interest in the sport and kind of go old school in a sense like that, creating your own decoys or, going out there for the love of doing it, not just for shooting piles of birds and posting it on social media or whatever. It's just great to be out here. And one thing I also learned about this is there's a lot of public access opportunities. So if somebody watching this or listening to this wants to say, hey, I want to come out and enjoy Horicon, there's a lot of opportunities for them, isn't there?
Horicon has five, major boat landings that you can easily gain access to the marsh. Not to mention there's numerous hunting from walk-in locations for upland, big game, and waterfowl. So, we're right in the middle of Green Bay, Milwaukee, and Madison. So, within an hour's drive, roughly, of some of the major metropolitan areas in the state.
Well, very good. Mark, thanks again. Keep up the good work out here. And, you do the mentored hunts, which I think is great, introducing people to hunting and hunting here and hunting at Horicon. And appreciate you taking us out, and thanks for being on the show.
Look forward to seeing you again.
852 million acres of public land, 147 million private properties,
all in the palm of your hand. The number one hunting GPS app just got better. With hundreds of custom map layers, 3D and topographic maps, you can easily scout on the road or at home before you go. And now you can get important weather details, CWD detection, and even know what crops have been planted where. Get the most trusted hunting GPS app ever made. OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
Looking for winter adventure? Might as well pick a place with over 1,000 lakes. Otter Tail County, Minnesota is in the middle of everywhere, offers a simpler pace, and has something for everyone. Find your inner otter at ottertaillakescountry.com.
Now it's time to check in with Joe Henry up at Lake of the Woods, get a Lake of the Woods fishing report, and talk about ice conditions with Joe from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how you doing?
Ice, baby. That's the theme of the week. I tell you, ice is getting formed right now, Brett. And, I'm not saying it's bitterly cold yet, but we've had some pretty cold temps. And that has gotten things started pretty darn good for us up north.
Yeah, we had 7, I think, for an overnight low one night this past week. And then some lows below freezing, of course, some warmer temperatures during the day. But I've been seeing, I don't get excited about early ice, really, although I'm seeing some nice fish get caught. Obviously, you want to preach safety, and most of the people that are going out there are saying, hey, I'm on small, shallow lakes. I know what I'm doing. Check the ice thoroughly. I saw Jason Mitchell had a video out there about checking ice, and I think one of our lakes had 3 inches on it the other day. But all depends on where you're at and, what kind of weather you've had there. And, of course, we want everybody to be safe. But I guess ice fishing is here, Joe.
Things are at least kind of getting rolling. When we talk about the big water of Lake of the Woods, a small inland lake for us would be a bay, a back bay. I mean, that's perspective. And, back in our back bays right now, some of the ice guides that have been out checking ice are finding 6-7 inches of ice on back bays. And that's in some places. Back bays have current, back bays have springs. Maybe the ice didn't form uniformly because of a wind or current that was rolling in there, but now it has a thin sheet of ice that you cannot tell the difference by looking at compared to the thicker sheet. So my whole point to that is that, yeah, things are forming. And, in fact, as far as the eye can see off that south shore, you can see ice out in the lake, despite some of the wind we've had. That's good. With that being said, I'm going to keep preaching this because I don't want anybody to get in trouble, but wait until the ice guides or the outfitters, wait until they mark that trail and say that it's okay. And then when they do say it's okay, Brett, what they're going to do is they're going to say, okay, first and foremost, we're allowing, four-wheelers and snowmobiles. And then they'll say side-by-sides. And then they might say side-by-sides pulling a small permanent house. And then it might be you know, eventually SUVs, you know, pulling nothing. And then it might be, you know, an SUV or a small pickup pulling a small day house. I mean, it goes up in increments, and they tell you that. And every area of the lake can be different. Just because they're letting, you know, side-by-sides out in one area, they might not be letting anybody out in another area because the lake is very different. It's a big lake, and ice conditions can vary based on so many things. And so, again, the premise to this story is just rely on those outfitters and those ice guides. They're out there marking these trails, and they're getting things done, you know. I'll tell you, I think the other thing is interesting is how they mark an ice trail. So they're getting out there, and, of course, it's safety first for them, too. I mean, they're working together in teams. A lot of them have float suits. They get picks around their neck. And they kind of know where typically the springs and things are. But, you know, when they're going out there, they're of course, using spud bars, you know. But they're also using other tools like a chainsaw. And a lot of these ice guys that are checking ice, they'll have a chainsaw. And then on the chainsaw, they'll have inches marked on that bar. So they can just stick the tip of that chainsaw, go through the ice, and boom, once it starts spraying water, they can see the ice levels at 3 inches, 4 inches, whatever the case might be. And that's a very quick way to be marking ice as they're out checking. As you saw in the picture, some are out using airboats when they check ice. Others have, you know, different kind of machines that float and stuff. So it's really quite a science. I would say this too, and this is, to me, this is extremely interesting, but when somebody goes out ice fishing on Lake of the Woods, and either you go out on your own on one of the marked trails they provide, or, you know, once we get the day houses out, they'll take you out oftentimes and shuttle you to a day house using their light ice rigs. That would be like a Suzuki Samurai or a Geo Trek or a very, very small, lightweight Jeep pulling a heated people hauler trailer. It's basically a glorified enclosed snowmobile trailer with benches. It's got a heater in it, and normally they put suspension in there. Super effective, but it's very lightweight. It gets out there. When they do that, you're going to notice that, hey, you know, that road wasn't that bumpy. I see a lot of rough ice, but that wasn't bad. Mother Nature didn't make one thin strip that was just nice and smooth. Yeah. You know, a lot of times what they've done is they've maybe flooded that road by punching a hole in the outside of it and pumping water up on top of it. Not only does that smooth it out, but it also makes it so that when you put water on top of the ice, that water freezes quicker because the cold air doesn't have to penetrate the existing ice to freeze it. In addition, a lot of times they'll pull a drag. A drag would be a great big heavy piece of steel. And what they do is they pull that back and forth over the rough ice. Ultimately, what it does is every trip across it, shaves it down, eventually to getting to more uniform, smooth ice. So they have to chop down and use chainsaws to cut down ice upheavals where the ice had blown in and blown up on top of each other. You know, they bridge cracks. There's so much that goes into it. The bottom line is, utilize their expertise, their hard work, and their services, and you're going to be safe on the ice.
I remember going out one of the first times I ice fished Lake of the Woods, and I was out with Ballard's. We were heading out to fish somewhere, and we had a train of bombers and tracked vehicles, and we stopped, and we were in the middle there somewhere, and I just see all the guides kind of get out, and I see them grabbing shovels and chainsaws, and here we come up on a pressure ridge, and at one point in the middle of the night on our road that we were going out, this pressure ridge had formed. It was about 4 feet high probably, and I know if I was going out myself in the dark somewhere like that, coming up on a pressure ridge on Lake of the Woods and without having the experience that they have out on the lake, I would have been like, this is probably as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a perfect example of leaning on their expertise. Yeah. I mean, they stopped. Hey, might be an inconvenience, but they're going to take their time and figure out, okay, where can we cross? Is this thing safe to cross? You know, let's chop it down and make it smooth if it is safe to cross. I mean, all those things are determinants. I've been out there before where there's a storm rolling in, and the expected snow and winds were going to be so high that the visibility made things very dangerous. So instead of going off at like 4:30 in the afternoon when the sun's hitting the trees, they picked us up at 3 o'clock, and they had all of us. It was already blowing hard. You could hardly see in front of you. And they had a vehicle with a flashing orange light on it. And they made sure everybody was ready to go at the same time from every fish house. And they brought in like six vehicles. We're following each other very closely along the way. And they even had a trailing vehicle just to make sure that nobody got left behind. And, you know, again, that's part of the service of, you know, going up the Lake of the Woods, that they certainly work super hard to get you on fish. They're moving those fish houses constantly to keep them on fish. You know, the old saying is, it's seven times more difficult to get a new customer than it is to keep an existing one. You know, these resorts and outfitters work so hard to put people on fish and to give them a, you know, a great experience. You can't always control the fishing. There's cold fronts that come through, pressure systems. Maybe the fish ate yesterday. But I'll tell you one thing they can do. They can work their tails off trying to make this a really enjoyable experience. They're going to try to do everything they can to increase your odds of catching rather than just fishing. And they want you to be happy, so you come back, basically.
Yeah, and I was pretty impressed the way they jumped out there that day and knocked that pressure ridge down. They deemed it was safe, and they smoothed it out. We drove right over it, went out and caught a limit of fish. So it was a pretty wild experience. You know, that lake, I've been in some sleeper houses out there, too, when it's like the Arctic tundra in the winter out there. You know, being an ice guide up on that lake, that's not an easy gig.
You know, I'll tell you something, it's a super tough gig. And you know, these people are getting up at oh dark 30. You know, they're getting up well when everybody else is still sleeping. And, you know, it's cold. They got to start the machinery, make sure everything works. They got to be coordinated. It's not easy at all. And I'll tell you the other thing too, is that most of these people that do this, they're anglers, man. I mean, these are people that love fishing, and that's why they're out working that ice. They'd rather be out in the environment and being on the lake all day than in an office or in a warehouse or something like that. And, you know, I mean, shameless plug, but right now we have resorts that are looking for people to work this winter. And, you know, it's tough getting employees in today's world, but, you know, if you're somebody who always kind of wanted to work where you like to play and you wanted to be part of that whole fishing scene up at Lake of the Woods, there's jobs. There's outside jobs. There's inside jobs. There's a lot of couples that come up, Brett. So a lot of times, in some cases, both have worked on the ice or both have worked inside. In other cases, maybe one works out and one works inside at the front desk or does cooking or serving or whatever the case might be. There are opportunities up north. And I should say, too, a number of our resorts are offering some lodging, too. So just to make things easy when you move up there. Lots of opportunities.
Oh, because such a cool experience, I think, to go up there, either start a career working up there or do it seasonally and maybe do a year here, 2 years up there. I saw our friend down here, Lance Peterson, just took a job up there to guide this winter.
I saw that too. Yeah, Lance is he's a great guy. He runs that veterans event up at Arneson's, and he decided that he's going to take a guiding job at Arneson's. And, you know, talk about following your heart, you know, and Lance is a good fisherman. I know he fishes out of a Warrior and, he does it both winter and summer. He's dialed, but good for him, you know. And I think that I just saw Larry Smith posted something. He posted a picture of him trolling, and it was cold out. And he said, you know, when you're doing something you love, you'll never work another day in your life. And boy, isn't that the case.
That's about right. Well, if people want to learn more about maybe coming up to work this winter or plan a fishing trip on the ice at Lake of the Woods, what should they do, Joe?
Either get a hold of us at Lake of the Woods Tours and we can direct you. Otherwise, simply check out our website, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba LLC. If you've got a question, comment, or story idea for us, send us an email. Go to sportingjournalradio.com. While you're there, you can learn how to advertise on the show and visit our store for hats, hoodies, coffee mugs, and more. Go to sportingjournalradio.com.